Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Research at the National Archives and Beyond Blog Talk Radio. This is your host, Bernice Alexander Bennett. I want to welcome the callers and chatters to Research at the National Archives and Beyond. This show will provide individuals interested in genealogy an opportunity to listen, learn, and take action. You can join me every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, where I will have a wonderful lineup of experts who will share resources, stories, and answer your burning genealogy questions. All of my guests share a deep passion and knowledge of genealogy and history. If you have logged in as a guest and wish to participate in the chat, you can sign in through your Facebook account or through Blog Talk Radio. I will also open the phone lines so that you can ask questions or give a comment. Well, this has been an exciting week for historians, genealogists, researchers of all kinds, and the general public with the release of the 1940 U.S. Census. I actually have bloodshot eyes after scrolling through pages and pages of online records. I have even had more fun sharing the news with my husband's aunt, who was a child in the 1940 census. Can you imagine calling someone up and telling them, I found you, you're 8 years old, and I'm seeing you with your mother and your father and your brothers? And she said, and yes, I was the baby, right? I said, that's right, you were the baby. But then what she then said, tell me who else do you see? And I told her about the entire page and all of the people on the census. Well, I can tell you one thing. After an hour, I had more history about the neighbors and the friends and the family that I could write a book. The next time I call her, I must record that conversation. In fact, I am going to visit her next month, and she did say to me, now make sure you bring me that page. Now, what about some of the others? I would definitely love to hear from you. So please call in right now. Call in, and I would like you to share your experience at 646-200-0491 and press 1 to speak to the host. What kind of experiences have you had over the last 3 days? Now, I know Monday we really tried to get in there. We couldn't get into the census, but by Monday night, by Tuesday, and oh, my God, yesterday, you know, somebody actually called me this morning and wanted to know, did I get any sleep? Well, I got sleep, but believe me, I jumped up first thing this morning and got right back on the computer. So I'm telling you, it is just something that I just feel just overjoyed with what information I'm getting out of the census. So if any of you would like to call in and share your experience, please call 646-200-0491 and press 1 to speak to the host. And I see a call coming in right now. 443, would you like to share your experience?
Yes, hi Bernice, this is Angela Walton-Raji. How are you?
Well, hello, Angela. Angela of African Roots Podcast. I'm so glad you called in. What happened this week, Angela?
Oh, gosh, this has been an up-and-down week. Emotionally, of course, we all know what happened on Monday. And imagine I was sitting there looking. The system wasn't loading. And I had the press in my house. So I was quite just unsure of what was going on. And then I started reading the notes on Twitter. We know the system crashed because the use was so heavy. I think I heard one person say from the archives, they interviewed someone the next day and asked them what happened. They said, well, we were expecting a flood, but we got a tsunami. Well, anyway, I decided on that day, since I couldn't get in right away, I decided to take a little bit of a look at the records that had already been uploaded on Ancestry and took a look and got a feeling of how it looked, and I enjoyed that. And then I decided to just, you know, have a little patience, which I did. The next day, again, a little bit of heavy use, a genie angel came to my rescue. A gentleman, Chris Odom from Conway, Arkansas, said, oh, I'm looking right at your folks. I had given him some names. Of course, you know, my heart is jumping out of my chest.
I can imagine.
He had found my mom and my great aunt and great uncle. They were living in Pulaski County. So, of course, I had to have that page right away and got that. And, of course, I was excited to also start exploring the neighborhood. Since then, and since things have been working, I have been going through Sebastian County looking for my dad. This is before my parents met. And I have been going, I've been so excited because I'm running into all these people I know. Now, this is the funny part. I haven't found my dad yet, but I have been so excited. I have seen all of my grandmother's friends and associates, these elderly ladies that I grew up with and knowing them, and it has been a joy, an absolute joy. And my eyes have been probably just as bloodshot. I'm telling you, it's been an experience. But it's been wonderful. I've been reconstructing the community. And I'm sure others have as well. And I've just had a great time. And this is really an historic type of thing, at least in the genealogy community. So I'm just glad you decided to bring up this subject before you get on to the main menu. But it's been great.
Well, thank you so much for sharing. Do I have any others who'd like to call in?
Hi, it's Sylvia.
Hi, Sylvia. I'm so glad that you're on. Yes, this is Sylvia Wong Lewis.
Hi, everyone. I wanted to let you know I was a little bit late getting to the census because I was it was a meltdown on my computer, but I did log on just before the show. And I found my mother. I couldn't believe it.
Oh, congratulations.
It was so wonderful. She was 6 years old, and she's living in Harlem, and all of the people living with her, my aunt and uncle, my grandmother, my step-grandfather, and they were, it looks like they were recently from the British West Indies. Actually, they used that phrase, British West Indies, on the census.
Wow.
Like that. And I saw that that she's listed as a Negro, and her father's listed as Chinese, and her mother is listed as the West Indian. So I thought
wow.
That was interesting. Yeah. So it was good to see them because I didn't know. I just took a stab at it. I didn't know if I'd find anyone.
Right. Was it easy for you to find, or did you have to go through a lot of pages?
I did not have to go through much pages, but I think that it was because, you know, I had done already so much genealogy searching on my family that her name popped up really quick.
Well, and that is great.
Yeah, so I was really thrilled to see that. And I also like that it gives me a photo, it gives me a kind of a visual of what Harlem looked like at this point, too. Because
yes.
I could see, you know, it's like the neighborhood that she lived in. I could see it was in the, it's at 114th Street. So that looks like maybe Spanish Harlem, and everybody on her block, it looks like, is Spanish. And it says Puerto Rico, of like all her neighbors. And there are a number of North Carolina people also on that page with her in Harlem. So that was a time, as you know, of the Great Migration.
Yes.
At this time. So of people coming from the islands and people coming from down south and coming up north. And so I was very grateful to see that. That was wonderful.
Well, Sylvia, I'm really happy that you were able to get into the census and see that. Well, let me just share with others who you are. And, you know, Sylvia is going to be sharing with us a story about her family from Shanghai to Harlem. And Sylvia is a journalist. She is also a genealogist. And she's going to just share with us her multicultural family's journey that includes slavery, indentured servitude, exploitation, courage, intrigue, determination, and triumph. You know what, Sylvia, just listening to those words, I can't wait to hear what you have to say. But,
okay.
You know, for those of you who don't know, Sylvia and I do have something in common. We both participated in the Digital Diaspora Family Reunion Project with Thomas Allen Harris. And Sylvia participated in the program in Harlem, and I participated in the program in Silver Spring, Maryland. And we connected because Sylvia posted on LinkedIn that she had been interviewed for the Digital Diaspora, and I responded to her, and the rest is history. But as you can see, genies do connect with each other, and so I'm just happy that everyone has taken the time out tonight to connect so that we could hear more about Sylvia's story. So, Sylvia, just give us a beginning. How did you begin your genealogy search?
Well, many of us, I began my genealogy, my introduction to genealogy really happened at my kitchen table, like many of us, and it was really just because of being with my family. And as you can tell from my introduction, my family is a very diverse and multicultural family. My mother's people are Chinese Trinidadians, which essentially means that she is a Caribbean person of Chinese descent. So the Shanghai part of my background starts out like that, where the people, her people came from China, then they immigrated to South America, and then they immigrated to the Caribbean, and then eventually to Harlem. And my father's people are from Mississippi, and they're very musical people, and they made a migration from the south to the north, to Harlem. So, and, you know, so I have what some people call a mixed marriage, I guess you would say. But, you know, it's in my home we had, it was multicultural, meaning there was Chinese people, there were Indian people, Spanish people. I should say my mother spoke Chinese and Spanish. Mm-hmm. And my father, I didn't realize that he spoke another language, too, that originates from the New Orleans, Louisiana area.
Mm-hmm.
And he said it was, he called it Creole. And but I don't know if that's what it was called. But anyway, so growing up, I always had this, I always lived inside of this two worlds, because the West Indian people and the Southern people, while they are very much alike in many ways, they're very different too. And I think because my family is a story of migration and immigration.
Okay.
And it goes back to the theme in this my story, and I guess in many of us, is slavery, and I believe that that's where the story comes together. Now, the reason why all of the
Chinese and Indian people were came over to the Caribbean and South America was because of the after slavery ended, there was a labor shortage, and they still needed the work to be done. And mm-hmm. so that's what my people were doing. And so my people came over. I would hear, for instance, I'd hear my grandmother's brothers talk about how they would use their machetes and slash through the jungles from South America to Central America to work on the Panama Canal. And mm-hmm. I used to just listen to those stories that they told. And even my grandmother, they were telling me about my grandmother, that's my mother's mother, how mm-hmm. she was such a tough lady. I always thought she was pretty tough in that she always lived in Harlem with black people. She wasn't afraid. You know, she just was one of these kind of, and was very comfortable with black people, even though she was Chinese, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I've heard stories about her. She and a friend of hers, they took off and they brought their pots and pans, and I called her one of the early entrepreneurs in my mother's family because they were cooks and laundress. They did cooking and laundry at all of the work camps in some of these workplaces, like at the Panama Canal when that was being built, and some of the railroads that were being built, and those were the things that they did. And so I just love hearing those stories. And my home was one of those places. I'm born in Harlem, but I grew up in Brooklyn. And my home, my family was one of those families that people came in waves and stayed with us and then mm-hmm. moved on. And you know that scenario, Bernice, you know about that, where people, you know, come in, they stay, and then they move on?
Well, yeah.
You know, my family was very much one of those kind of families.
Yeah, well, I heard, you know, some of those stories about my family members who moved from South Carolina to the Washington, mm-hmm. D.C. area, and they
uh-huh.
would come and settle and then move on.
Right.
So I heard
right.
a similar type of pattern.
Yeah, that was the pattern of migration. It's like you really, we didn't have hotels to stay in, so as you made your way wherever you were going, you already had information from family or friends at what we call extended family.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another thing that I saw in that 1940s census is that I saw two people who I know are not relatives, but I had always thought they were relatives.
Yes.
And that's what I mean. They were my extended aunts and uncles that have been in my family all my life and apparently moved together from the West Indies and then eventually settled in Harlem and then, you know, moved on. So I had a kind of a childhood that was full of a lot of colorful people. And I always said, you know, we had a very this is to say I had a very popular house on my block with my friends. People were always coming in to see what was going on because, especially on the weekends, there was a lot of food getting cooked and a lot of music and a lot of languages. And,
well, you know, you're presenting, I mean, I'm listening to you. You said it began right after slavery, so we're talking 1865. But your family members were in the Panama. Am I hearing that correctly?
Yeah, well, they came in, yes, I was saying partly I'm adding that to the story because even though my family, I would say my mother's from Trinidad, my grandmother's from Trinidad, my mother's
okay.
father is from Guyana, his mother is from Venezuela, my great-grandmother's from Venezuela, and then my great-grandmother's husband is the one, my great-grandmother's husband's from China. And
mm-hmm.
on my grandfather's side, my mother's father, he's also, he's Chinese and black, and he's from Guyana. And his name is Henry Wong Cameron. And that's why I use the Wong, because that's my mother's name.
Well, let me ask you something. You have a picture. You shared with us a picture. And who is that? Your grandmother and grandfather?
No, that's actually the Chinese man and the black man and the black woman.
Yes.
Yes, that's my uncle. That's my grandmother's brother.
Okay.
And his wife. And I just thought that was such a lovely picture, because there they are, all dressed up, holding hands and taking a picture, because they're heading out to his, not Elks, the Masons. He was a Mason.
Amazing. Well, that's a lovely picture.
Isn't that cute? I thought that was so sweet, because look at her. She's dripping in furs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just such a picture of pride. And they're in their own home. They have a chandelier, and they have beautiful furniture. And this is a long time ago. And when I think about their story, I mean, he's one of those people who, he's one of the uncles who slashed his way through the jungles of South America to from Venezuela to Trinidad to the Panama Canal to, you know, back home, then back, then got hopped on one of those freighter ships and did that a while they were young kids, and he would tell stories about, this was backbreaking work that we did as kids, and it made men out of us, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So he, I have him because he's really my grandfather, in that he lived near us. He lived in Brooklyn, and my mother's father and her mother, my grandparents were divorced. And so even though my grandmother did get married again, she married a very Chinese man who could hardly speak English. But this is her brother, Uncle Louis, and he was more or less like our grandfather, in that he was always at our home. On the weekends, we would go stay with him, or he would visit with us. And so he was very much part of our everyday life. And so I was so honored to, I was so happy to find his picture and his aunt and his wife, rather, Aunt Evelyn. And you can see she's a soul sister, and she's actually from Alabama. And I'm sorry I didn't show any, I couldn't find more photographs of, you know, their life and our life together, but I thought that was such a sweet photograph.
Mm-hmm. Now,
Go ahead. No, I was just going to add that. So eventually, my family didn't all come over to the States in one big bunch. It was a very similar, like Southern people did when they did their migration from the South to the North or to the West, where maybe one or two people would come, and then one or two more people would come after a year. One gets settled in somewhere, and then some more would come, and so that's how. For instance, I remember meeting my mother's sister with her for the first time. My mother met her own sister for the first time, and I was myself 15 years old, and it was because of this whole migration. I would say a lot of it had to do with the immigration. There was a policy for a while against Chinese immigrants. I don't know if you remember that in our history books, but there was something that they called the Yellow Peril and all of that. So there was a time, like in this, I don't have the exact dates, but there was a severe limitation on the number of Chinese people who could immigrate. So my mother's people couldn't all come at the same time. They had to come. And they came to America through various ways. They came through California, or they came through England. Most of them actually came through the UK, and that's why I bring out a lot of the UK research. They came
Well, let me ask you a question about the UK research. Now, in searching the American National Archives, is it different from searching UK's National Archives?
Well, it is. I'm glad you asked that. It is. I mean, it's a big, comprehensive volume of work that they have, just like ours. But you can't really search it online like we can do that, like we can. You have to go to London, actually, to do a lot of it. And for a person like myself or any of us that has a Caribbean background, and believe it or not, a lot of us have a Caribbean background, whether we know it or not. And that's another thing. I think that when you start to look at some of the UK's, some of their files of the ships and things like that, you can see that they kept a very orderly, they kept very orderly track, and they kept track of a lot of things, of how they moved people around. And say even during the Civil War, it's possible that some of the loyalists went took some of the black people back with them to England, or some of the ships that the slave ships would come directly from Africa. They would go straight to the Caribbean from Africa, or sometimes they would go from Africa to right away to Virginia. So, you know, it just depends, I think, on what ship you were on where your ancestors, you know, where your ancestors come from. But many of us have a Caribbean heritage. If they kept tracing it back, I think they would find that out. That's what I was thinking.
Well, Sylvia, we have someone who's actually calling in, and they have a question for you, if you're ready to answer some questions. Area code 204, you're live. You have a question or a comment?
Is it 240?
Yes.
No, I don't have a question. I was told to call in by Bernice to just share my particular information on how I'm finding things from the 1940 census.
Okay, we will call in. I'm going to have to put you on hold, and you can call in later because we discussed that earlier. But I will take that call later, okay?
Okay.
Thank you.
We do have another
question, though. Someone else is calling in from area code 845.
Hi, Bernice. How are you?
Hi.
Hi, Ms. Wong Lewis. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Wonderful. I have a question. I'm a 70 soul child, and I'm also a amateur genealogist, and I'm from New York as well. And in the area of New York that I live in, we have a lot of Puerto Rican people here whose families came during the 1960s. And I have someone who's interested in starting their Caribbean family research. And how would they go about doing that? What are the first steps in researching your family if they are maybe first or second generation Caribbean in the United States?
Well, okay, so I would say this. The first thing that you have to do is you have to source the public records office, and that's part of the UK. It's the UK public record office, and they have a file there, and this is where most of the people in the Caribbean, especially Puerto Rico, Cuba, Barbados, Jamaica, Trinidad, all those places, they were colonies, and so I would say for the British colonies, now for your Spanish people it's a little bit different, but for the British colonies, the UK has a specific file. It's called the Colonial Office Records. And in this file, they're classified and broken down into things like they have original correspondence from the Colonial Office. So each island had its own Colonial Office, and they had and these files would contain petitions, tax lists, inhabitant lists, civil service applications, pension records, land grants, newspapers, lists of prisoners, court records. These are kinds of things that you would find in the Colonial Office records. And then you would find other things like newspapers. This to me is, as a journalist, that to me is like the best way to find out about your family is to go where they come from and try to search the records. But I would say first and foremost, and since you say you're a genealogist too, you know, first thing you do is you ask a lot of questions of your family, find out where they're from, and ask them about their family and find out as much as you can about them, their names, where they lived, how they got there, anything you can find out. And then once you find out some of that, then you can you'll have to make a trip. Your friend from Puerto Rico will have to make a trip, because actually I was trying to do that to find out about some of my relatives who were in Panama, because I'm trying to find out that even I know they're not from Panama, I know that they lived there a long time, and I was told that I would have to eventually go there. So that would be one of the best ways, is first interview, talk to your family, have your friend talk to her family members, find out which of the towns that her family comes from. And then, because another thing is that, well, you'll see this on that show that Professor Gates does. He does a whole program, series of programs on slavery in Latin America. I mean, a lot of the Spanish people are black too, but they have, just like African Americans, we all have these issues about race that really comes from slavery. And so in Puerto Rico, there is, and I've been to Puerto Rico a lot, and in Puerto Rico, it's just like some of the southern states where you have whole towns that are all blonde, blue-eyed people, and then you have whole towns that are all black, dark-skinned, very African-looking people. So it is definitely a country that was a slavery country, and all of the people who live there are there because of slavery. The only people that were there before the slaves were the Indians, just like the other Indians from Jamaica or Trinidad or all of those other, you know, they're not all dead, but, you know, they didn't survive they didn't survive as much as when the slaves were brought in.
Okay, well, thank you very much for sharing that information with our caller, and we're going to take a quick break and come back on in a minute, okay? Just a
okay.
Quick break.
All right.
Welcome back to Research at the National Archives and Beyond Blog Talk Radio. You're listening to Sylvia Wong Lewis. And we've also had a caller to call in to just, she wanted to give us some information about what she found in the 1940 census. So I'm going to bring on this caller so that she could share with us what she discovered in the 1940 census. And then we're going to go back to our guest, Sylvia Wong Lewis, as she discusses from Shanghai to Harlem. I guess, are you on 240? You had some comments you wanted to make about the 1940 census?
Well, I mean, I just found that it was really, really difficult for me to search it. I was searching it on the Ancestry.com, and by the time the National Archives got their thing together and it wasn't stalling, I was able to find them, because on the National Archives, you're able to actually put in the street that your family lived on. And when I did that, I was able to find my grandparents and their children and even some of their children's children. It went up to 18 people living in the house. And my cousin, who is a real estate agent, said that that house now is worth over $500,000.
Wow. And how much did they put a value on the house at that time in 1940?
Well, he was running it at that time, and at that time he was renting it for $43 a month.
Wow. Well, what an interesting finding. Well, thank you so much for calling in. I'm sure that you will continue to have some very interesting experiences as you go through the 1940 census. So 18 people in the house, very interesting. Thank
mm-hmm.
you so much for calling in.
Okay.
Okay, we're back to Sylvia Wong Lewis. And Sylvia, could you share with us more about the Chinese indentured workers that were brought into South American Caribbean plantations after African slavery ended?
Right, right. Well, the Chinese Caribbeans are Chinese ethnic people. And I used to ask my grandmother, did she ever want to go back to China, you know? And she would say no because we're Hakka people. So I didn't understand what that meant. But I hadn't really talked about that word until when I went on a trip to China and I started seeing that word around China. Was that Hakka this, Hakka that? That would be the name of different businesses. And I thought, that is weird. You know, I hadn't heard that word since my grandmother, since I was a child, really.
Mm-hmm.
And the term, it's something, it's like a derogatory term. The term is, it's the name of, it's what they call the tribe of people in China. They originated in the northeast provinces of China, like maybe 20,000 years ago. But then the word Hakka means guest family or guest in your own home. So you know, there are people who even in China they were known as like nomadic people. They scattered around. They're always traveling, and they are the people of all of the Chinese people that you see in say in the Caribbean. All of the Chinese people you see in Africa. All of the ones in South America. All the ones in Hawaii, all of the ones in Southeast Asia, like Vietnam and the
mm-hmm.
Philippines. These are all what they call Hakka people. They're Chinese people that have been migrating for centuries all over the world. So they're like a migratory group. And so it's kind of like so they're known for being risk takers, being strong-minded people, being very successful. The women are known for not having their feet bound. You know, in the Chinese culture, you have to have your feet bound in order to find a husband, you know. So
mm-hmm.
but that was, you know, a traditional culture there. But these women in particular, they're respected because they're very strong and very entrepreneurial, and they're treated as equal to men and so they own their own land, you know. They're different from the rest of the Chinese traditional people. So
mm-hmm.
that's why you'll find if you've been to the Caribbean and especially like Jamaica or Trinidad or Guyana, I mean you'll see they are all of the merchants and business people there. They have I would almost say that they have their own culture within. It's like a culture within a culture.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so that's what. So they have a migration history. So between, let's say, between 1853 and 1879, 14,000 Chinese laborers were imported to the British Caribbean, and they were part of a large system of contract labor, and they were bound for the sugar plantations. And so I described their contract labor, indentured servitude. I described that as, you know, being exploited and you know, it's like they were, in a way, they were, a lot of them were tricked
Because if people say, oh, well, they were indentured, so it's different from being a slave because a slave did not have a choice. Their slaves were kidnapped from Africa, forced here, forced onto ships and brought here against their will, where, you know, the Chinese people, they willingly signed up. But just like when we saw in the news the other night about the sex slavery of all of the Asian girls and stuff, that similar thing happened to the Chinese workers back then. They thought they were signing up for one thing, but ended up when they saw the plantations and the kind of work that and the conditions that they'd have to live in, they really wanted to go back. And a lot of them did go back, but a lot of them committed suicide, too. I mean, so they have their own story, and I've been reading a lot about it and about the Chinese immigrants that came to, say, South America, the ones like my people that came to Guyana and to Trinidad, and then the ones to Cuba and to Brazil. And in the UK's National Archives, they have narratives and stories. It's different. It's like, that's what we were talking about, what's the difference between the UK National Archives and the American National Archives.
Yes.
What I noticed was that each island, each place, wherever they settled and made a colony, they have a whole file, or I guess as you will, a whole section, like for Trinidad or for Jamaica. And they have everything in subdivisions for each place where they were. How many ships were there, how many people they brought there, how many died there, what happened to them. You know, they have a whole thing. And I wish that America's National Archives had that like that by the states, because, you know, we, when we're searching, we go by each state. Like my family, your family's from Louisiana, and I have some family that's in Mississippi. So we have to kind of get to know people who know how to search those particular states, and each state has different information. Not everybody has the same kind of information, and it wasn't uniform, you know. So,
well, there's a question coming out of the chat, and what they would like to know is, what was the death rate for Chinese workers on the sugar plantations?
Oh, the death rate was really very high. In fact, I had a kind of a comparative, I guess you could say, a comparative, comparing how slavery was compared here as it was to the States. And the death rate was really very high. There was, I think that the American slavery system was different because, Unlike in the Caribbean islands where they had these huge plantations, I mean huge, where you had hundreds of slaves working each plantation, where in America you didn't have a lot of plantations where you had hundreds and hundreds of them, of slaves in one plantation. You know, you usually had, you know, smaller sized ones. So it was a little bit different. But I would say, like, I read one story in the building of the railroad in Panama, where they brought in a group of 300 Chinese workers, and almost all of them committed suicide. And then they brought in and they hung themselves. I mean, in the way they did ritual hanging suicides. I mean, some of them hung themselves from the tree by their own hair. You know, they used to have those long ponytails.
Yes.
And I mean, these were written up in reports, so I read about them. So, I read that the conditions were really bad, and that the death rates of the compared to America, the death rates were very high in the Caribbean. I have a piece here. The death rates for black slaves in these islands were higher than the birth rate. And it said, one piece I have here, it said that it was the slave ships that they were supervised under demanding masters, and they were given little care, medical care, and they had poor living conditions. And that they were supposedly, you know, people like to think that American slavery was worse than
Caribbean slavery, but it was very brutal there too. And
mm-hmm.
it was really because of the work conditions. And so, and they show a picture of this slave, and he's laying there, and his leg was chopped off, and his arm was chopped off, and he was saying, yeah, this is what I had to go through just so you can get some sugar. And so, you know, it's like these sugar plantations were really very, very rough. I mean, it's just like the cotton plantations were rough here. The sugar plantations were horror fields
mm-hmm.
from what I've been reading. So,
now,
yes,
are you reading, is there
high.
A book that you're reading, or just exactly what are you reading?
Well, I was just quoting from, just now, I was quoting from a piece called Slavery in the British and French with West Indies that
okay.
I got from online. And, you know, it talked about, and it talked about the slavery and the conditions in some of the islands. But there aren't, it's just like our history, too, our African-American history. I mean, you really have to look at so many different texts, and you have
mm-hmm.
to you have to really do a search. There's no one place. But I would certainly say that you should go to England, to especially London, to their National Archives. And it's, well, I guess I haven't been to the National Archives down there in D.C., but I've been to the National Archives here in New York. It's a regional office. So,
mm-hmm.
But I understand, and from just what I've been reading online from the National Archives, the UK National Archives, they have exhibits featuring slavery artifacts and things like that so that you can get a sense of what slavery was like there. And they have a huge museum in Liverpool that is, I always felt jealous that we didn't have something like that. But now I guess we are getting something that's really wonderful at the Smithsonian.
That's right. Well, Sylvia, there's a question coming out of the chat. Did you actually see your Wong family history book in China in their language?
No, I did not see their book. So actually, that's the part of my story that I'm still searching. I'm still trying to find, just like with the slavery, find out what ship, you know, my ancestor came in on or whatever. I'm still trying to find that. That's another thing that I thought that a lot of people would say, oh, well, the Chinese culture is like, it's an ancient culture. So many people in China can trace their history back to so many different dynasties. This was always something that I heard when I was growing up.
Yes.
And I had a lot of my mother, my grandmother, they were the family genealogists. They had pictures, they had stories and things that I would, you know, hear them. So I always thought, because they always said, oh, you know, well, we're, our families go back to the Dan China dynasty or whatever. But I learned from going to China that there's a lot of migration within the country too.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Chinese people were, why did they leave China? Well, because they were not treated very well too throughout their history. It's the same thing all over the world. Why do people leave where they come from? It's, you know, something, there's a problem there and how they're treated, and they want to seek a better life. So that said, no, I did not find my family's crest or something, I guess you would say. I just know that since I know from family stories that we are Hakka people, then I know that we come from a branch of the Han Dynasty, that's H-A-N, the Han Dynasty. So
mm-hmm.
I just know that our people come from that tribe of people. And it's the
mm-hmm.
same way if, like, on my black side, when I took that DNA test,
yes.
I found out that my father's tribe was the same tribe you mentioned. What was that called?
The Fulani?
Not Fulani, with another tribe, I can't remember.
Yoruba?
No, it wasn't Yoruba, no. But
anyway, like my it was a West African. It was the two. I found two tribes on my father's side, which I call my black side. And but I do have black on my mother's side because I met, as I mentioned, her father was black and Chinese from Guyana. So and he was a whole different story because he was what he called himself when we were being black. He says he's not black. He's British. Okay.
Oh. Okay.
Because a lot of the people who are from the Caribbean and they go and they were colonized by the British people and then so it gave them that British passport. And so a lot of my family did come in from England. And
yes.
So they consider themselves British people. So, but anyway, he is black. And I found out that his people were East African. And remember we were talking about that not all black people have West African heritage, even though we assume that all of the slaves came from West Africa, came from that one particular place. But as we know now, a lot of the people who were put into slavery were brought there or migrated there. There was a lot of migration in the country, just like it is here in America. I mean, I'm from, my family is from the islands and from China, and then they came to California, New York, or whatever, and same thing. Even the people in Trinidad, how did my mother's grandmother come to Trinidad? Where did they come from? Well, they came from Venezuela. And how did they get to Venezuela? Well, the Chinese people came from China, and they were working. So that's, and even within the islands, it's like the lady that called before that had
yes.
a Puerto Rican friend. A lot of the people in Puerto Rico are not all from Puerto Rico. A lot of them could be from Jamaica. They could be from Barbados, from Cuba, from Spain. You know, a lot of the people, wherever you are, could be migration. Your family may have migrated from other places.
Another question coming out of the chat. Did any of your family come through Ellis Island?
Actually, I did not find anyone coming through Ellis Island, but I did find my, you asked, if I had any surprises.
Yes, have you had any surprises?
I did, believe it or not. I was actually looking, and this is the thing about genealogy. You know how you start out looking for one thing, and you find
yes.
that, and you find something else. Now, I was looking for some military records of my black side, my family from Mississippi and Louisiana. I was, because I was very moved by these different stories of people who had ancestors that fought in the Civil War. And I thought, well, maybe I have ancestors that did that too. So I went to the National Archives here in New York, a regional office, and I was searching and searching, and I couldn't find anything. And so while I was taking a break, I thought, well, I had already looked up my mother's grandmother. So I just thought, let me just look her up. And I don't know. I don't know what made me do that. But do you know I found her in the Chinese Exclusionary Index, my mother's grandmother. And guess what? I found, and when I told the lady that I was looking for that, and the lady got the file out, and she came up to me, and she said, "Miss, you won't believe this, but I found your ancestor, and you look just like her." I said, "What?" She said, "Yes, we have a photograph of her. I found my great-grandmother in the Chinese Index here
yes.
in New York." So that I thought that would mean that she came here on Ellis Island, because why would she be in the Chinese Exclusionary Index? I thought maybe this was an immigration. It is an immigration document, but she was traveling. She was actually on a ship called the Matura, M-A-T-U-R. I have all of this. I have a whole file. It's actually 20 pages. And I was so thrilled. You know how that is, right?
Oh, yes. I'm sure you were doing the genealogy happy dance.
Oh, my God. I was so excited. I said, what is this? I had no idea that I would find my great-grandmother
And so I thought it was going to be Ellis Island too. I thought,
yes,
oh, this must be Ellis Island. But when I looked at it, and then it didn't say Ellis Island. It was a ship that came to port, and it came. She was traveling actually from. She had already been here. She was in California, and
mm-hmm.
Came by ship, and then she was traveling with her husband. And that's another thing. I found my great grandfather's name. I never knew his name. His name is Louis Wu.
Well, there's a question. What year was the document that you that they shared with you?
It was, let me get it here. It was 1929 or something. I'm going to look at it right now because
mm-hmm.
I was so thrilled. I couldn't believe it because it had her picture. And actually what I did, I had found it on the Ancestry.com. I looked up my great-great-grandmother and found out she was born in 1872, and I found her last name was, her name was Paulina Simeon. So,
mm-hmm.
and I had heard that she was a native from Venezuela, so I didn't know what she was, you know. So then when I looked up in the archives, the Gen Web and stuff. And anyway, so let me look at this. I think it was the 1921. Okay, here it is, Immigration Services. It's dated August 7th, 1929. Oh, it is Ellis Island. What am I talking about? It says yes, it says U.S. Department of Labor, Office of Commissioner of... and it says Ellis Island, and it says Paulina Simeon and Emily Lycott, and that's Emily Lycott is my grandmother's sister,
mm-hmm.
and that's what it says. It's a report of inspection of Chinese passengers at the port of New York, and she had her three children from Trinidad, and they were traveling. It's not like immigration. It's like they were traveling. You know?
Yes, yes.
It just so happened that they had to, and it said, please be advised that the two Chinese passengers on the SS Matura who arrived at this port on the fourth instant, that means they had traveled four times already, each
mm-hmm.
holding a Section 6 paper, properly visaed and were admitted. And then it says that they were... Because they are British subjects, because remember, they lived in Trinidad, which is a British colony. It says, because they were British subjects, they were holding original copies of their certificate, British certificate, issued by their Inspector General of the island of Trinidad. And it says, yeah. And so, it's just saying that they had permission because they were British subjects.
Was the destination New York?
No, they were passing through. They were already here, because that's 1929, because they had already been here. My family came in the early 1900s.
Yes.
So I knew that wasn't like their, time of, just getting here. Cause it shows that they have an address in California. And all of this stuff. So,
do you have any recommendations? Because there may be people who are listening who really want to know. Well, where should they begin their research? And I know you did share a little bit of that with the caller. But what kind of recommendations or tips could you give to others?
Well, I would say since I guess most of this conversation tonight was really about Caribbean heritage and genealogy, I would say that that you have to, talk to your family, just like in the States, you have to talk to your family and find out more about your history and where people came from and names and things like that. And similarly, like in American stories, is that you can't really go by last names. You really have to go by first names. And that's another thing that I noticed, that the same names are repeated through generations. And that you have to go back to wherever you come from. It's just like you were telling me, Bernice, that I really do need to go down to Louisiana to find out more about my family that came from there. I mean,
yes.
There's so much you can do from your desk, wherever you are, on Ancestry.com and all the different websites. I mean, these help tremendously, these websites.
Oh, yes. But there's nothing like visiting the home place.
Exactly.
To walk on the land where your ancestors walk.
Exactly.
To walk through the neighborhoods where your ancestors live.
Exactly. So I didn't, in other words, when I went to Hong Kong, which is where my family left, that's the ship that they took from Hong Kong to, you know, to go to South America and then become, you know, what they call slavery. I mean, we call it, you know, indentured servitude, but it was really slavery for them, too. I know that when I went to Hong Kong, I actually felt differently. It's kind of like going to Africa and going to the point of no return, you know, because when you go to the place where you know your people came from, it gives you a sense of something. And it does reinforce and confirm some of the things that you heard, some of the stories that you heard from your family.
Yes, definitely, definitely.
So it's just like I said, it's like people in my family, they left footprints for me to follow. I mean, by talking about things like Hakka, then I said, oh, well, Hakka, I heard that word before. So when I went to China and I saw everything was Hakka, I said, oh, what is that? And I said, oh, so it makes sense. And
well, are you planning on writing a book about your family's experience?
Yes. Well, that's the working title. I still have so much searching to do. I feel like it, to some extent I could probably write a book right now, but I still, you know, am doing a lot of searching for different parts of the family that I still haven't found and want to confirm some of the stories that I heard. So, yes, the book that I'm writing is the working title is called From Shanghai to Harlem. And it's a book of, is what I call it, it's a story. It's an American story of migration and immigration. And basically, it's all towards, you know, they're finding the American dream. And so I didn't tell you, so the love story is that my mother, coming from a Chinese family, her people wanted her to take piano lessons, right? And my paternal grandmother, who came up from Mississippi and New Orleans, they were musical people. And they settled in Harlem. And she set up a music school, actually several music schools, Madame Tempe Smith, that's my grandmother, paternal grandmother. And so my mother was brought to my paternal grandmother's music school in Harlem to take piano lessons, believe it or not. And
mm-hmm.
that's where my mother met my father.
Oh, that's
it,
how it happened.
Yes, it was. Yeah. It's actually a sweet little love story, is that because, as you know, it might be, and some people say it's kind of like, you know, all Chinese people who play the violin and study music. But in a way, it's true, because as poor as they were, my grandmother wanted to make sure her children had a musical education. So
here it is,
Chinese people bringing my mother to this black lady's music school.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where my mother met my father. And then they got married, and then that's where I came from.
Well, isn't that interesting? Well, now there's a question coming out of the chat. As a person of mixed ancestry, do you feel Chinese in China?
No, I have to tell you, though, every place I go, when people look at me, they always usually think they know I'm black, but they might think I might be Spanish, you know. And then while I was there, I told people that my mother's people were from China, and they always would say, oh, you must be Burma, because Burma were the dark people, the brown people.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt a kinship, and believe it or not, the people in China are just as diverse as we are. So you had dark ones and light ones and people with full lips and full nose and nappy hair and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I did see people that looked like people, you know, in my family. And they were stone, as they say, stone Chinese people. So I felt very comfortable there while I was there.
Well, Sylvia, this has been one very, very interesting discussion. And I want to thank you so much for joining me tonight and for joining the guests and answering their questions and just providing us with some information that many of us are not as attuned to. And so you have really enlightened us, definitely provided more information. So
thank you so very much. I enjoyed sharing my family story, and I really appreciate this opportunity to tell people. I should tell you, too, in China, everybody has black culture. They love black music. They love Obama. I mean, that was wonderful. They all try to have soul there. It was great.
Well, wonderful. You know, it's always something about the soul, and we definitely have it to share with everyone. I'd like to just say that I'm going to close out this discussion, but thank you so very much for joining us. And others are clapping for you and saying they enjoyed it. So thank you so much.
You.
Okay.
Thank you.
And I'm going to keep the line open just in case we want to continue the discussion about the 1940 census. So I'm going to take a quick break and then come back on again, tell you about next week, and then we can then talk a little bit more about the 1940 census if any of you would like to continue that discussion. So just a quick break, okay? I want to welcome everybody back to Research at the National Archives and Beyond Blog Talk Radio Show. Well, next week, I'd like you to please join me for an exciting discussion with Derek S. Davey. Derek will discuss the various collections at libraries and educational institutions in Ohio and Michigan, as well as various genealogical groups that specialize in this region. So Derek has been conducting research for quite a long time, and he serves as the administrator of the Ohio and Michigan Research Communities on Facebook. And these pages are sponsored by Family Search. He also lectures on a variety of topics related to genealogy in Ohio, Michigan, and Indiana. So please join me next week. Now, anybody want to call in and talk about that 1940 census, or are you ready to go to bed? Is that what's going on right now? You know, I don't know if I'm going to end up going to bed. I'm probably going to get back on the computer and start looking at that 1940 census again because I have really had a good time, and it's just a very exciting time for all of us to see what our ancestors were doing, who was in the neighborhood, even if they had those supplemental questions that were asked of them. So if any of you are interested in calling in, you want to call in, I'm here. I'm going to keep the line open, 646-200-0491, and press 1 to speak to the host. By the way, have any of you signed up to serve as indexers? You know, they really need that help. I just discovered, it's just something. I was looking at that 1940 census and saying, I wish that I could just put in a name. I wish I could just put in a place and that information would just pop up. Well, not quite yet. Simply because it has not been indexed. And I know many of us, and I'm one of them for certain, I wanted to spend my time just figuring out how to get into the 1940 census. Once understanding how to get into the 1940 census, then I too will sign up to begin to index. But right now I'm working on just making sense out of the information that I'm gathering. So anybody, if you're interested in calling on, I'm here, 646-200-0491. You'd like to make a call, 646-200-0491, and press 1 to speak to the host. Well, I don't see anyone calling in, so I would like to just say good night. Thank you again, Sylvia, and remember, your ancestors left footprints. Footprints, what did I say? Therefore, you shall follow the clues that are presented to you through oral history, family records, research at the National Archives and beyond. And remember, tune in to African Roots Podcast tomorrow because we know Angela's going to have a lot to say about the 1940 census. So thank you for joining Research at the National Archives and beyond. This is your host, Bernice Alexander Bennett. Good night, and I look forward to you joining me next Thursday. Good night.